All right, we are live on the Nicholas Paul Arnold Hour, and I'm joined by legendary jazz guitarist Jody Fisher. Thanks so much for coming on.
Thanks for having me on, Nicholas.
How are you doing?
I'm doing good. I'm doing good. I live in the mountains. We're covered with snow at the moment, but
Oh,
so
are you? Nice.
a little chilly, but doing okay.
Is it at its peak as far as the when's when do, 'cause it's spring now, so I'd imagine the snow is going to start melting, right? Or does it usually stay icy and snowy for a while into spring?
Well, it's different every year. This year we had quite a bit of snow, and we got a little more yesterday, and it's starting to melt though. So I'm a happy
Is it? Is
guy.
it? Are you not a are you not a big fan of the snow, or are you just sort of over it towards the end of the summer?
Well, I just
Over the winter, I'm sorry.
kind of prefer the great indoors, so.
Oh, is that right? But you know what? You're probably better off because I live in Los Angeles, the Valley area,
Yeah, sure.
and I honestly I'm over it. It's just I envy you. I'd rather put up with the snow than deal with a lot of the dummies I'm dealing with down here.
Yeah, well, I do commute every day, so I'm in your world too, for sure.
Are
So,
you?
yeah.
What kind of commute do you have each day? Because you're
Well,
teaching at Redlands, right?
yeah, of course, this year of the pandemic and everything, the commuting's much less, right? But I
Right.
commute to Redlands and to Riverside and to Los Angeles and San Diego and Pasadena and pretty much all over the place,
Oh wow. So, now having said that, teaching at Redlands, you have you are like a like. This is not me fanboying, but you are like legendary status. I remember discover I came it was like 11 or 12 years ago. I just came across your Moonlight video on YouTube. That was like one of my absolute favorite songs that you've ever done. And since then, like I've been listening to your work and like your lessons and things you put out, and like you've worked with everybody. Do you find yourself like looking at your career and just like I'm feeling proud, or is it kind of like a never ending thing for you where you don't really like realize like all that you've accomplished because you're still at it?
That's a really interesting question. Yeah, I'm very much still at it. Yeah, I don't, re intend to retire or anything like that. I mean, what would I do? Sit around and play guitar at home?
Right.
The truth is, I've been so busy all my life
Right.
that I've never really had time to sit back and kind of take stock of what I've been doing. And so, as soon as I'm finished with one project, I have two or three
Right.
waiting. So I just stay really busy all the time.
Oh, and that's a good thing. And you came up in a generation to where, definitely, I'd imagine a lot different than it is now for like up and coming guitar players, because it's sort of like you've established yourself, like your part in the jazz world or in the guitar world in general. But guitar players these days who are trying to do the sort of thing you did, or like Alan Holdsworth, or like a guitarist, like it's not the same anymore. I mean, do you agree with that? I mean, because it seems like the music platform, not platform, but like the whole blueprint of like the music like entertainment world is different now,
Oh, for sure, for sure. When I first started, I actually started playing bars when I was about 13 years old, 13 or 14. And
Back
back
when you
then,
could do that.
well, you really couldn't. What the law was is if it was a bar and they had a kitchen, you could stay until the kitchen closed, right?
Oh, okay.
And so the kitchen would close, and I'd stay anyway. But
Right.
so I had teachers and people that would bring me to work with them, and I got a lot of experience. But back then, making a living playing guitar or anything was quite viable. I mean, most of the gigs back there were 4 or 5, 6 nights a week,
Right.
and you'd stay there for a few weeks or a month or a year or whatever it is, but there was always another gig waiting. And that's really different now, from what I see. Most people get one night of work and then they go somewhere else, if that,
Right. And especially not like probably even less now because of this crummy of a year,
Oh, for sure, for sure. The other thing too is there were record companies, and
Right.
a lot of people did not like that system. But the truth is, they did develop artists and they did put out music and
Right.
acted as a filter, so not everybody with a microphone could put out a record,
But now everyone can. I always tell people social media and internet, it's kind of like a double-edged sword. It's, you know, it's, it has its good qualities, but also has a lot of bad qualities for entertainers, mainly musicians. I've noticed that, like, you back then could have, like, it, actually, I don't know. Like, what do you think it's, it, there's a lot of trade-offs on both sides of the coin. Like, do you feel like people had it easier then, where they had less exposure, which meant more or opportunity for themselves, but they had to put their, put more work to get themselves noticed? Or, like, nowadays people don't have to do as much work to get noticed, but there's a lot more saturation, like people doing it.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying?
Yeah. That's a really good description. What I miss about it back then is that, you know, you're going to step on stage every night. It was almost like a laboratory. You know what I
right.
mean? Like, okay, so I'm going to get a little bit better. I'm going to be a little better player tonight than I was last night. And every day you saw progress. And that's what you don't see, you know, right now. As far as getting, you know, recognition, it's easier now, of course, right? But it's just crazy out there. I mean, everybody has CDs out or recordings or streaming or something, right?
Right.
You know, so it's very, very different. I think growth as a musician was better before, quite honestly.
Why do you suppose that?
Because of that laboratory environment. You know, you worked every night, right? And it was like a laboratory. You experimented, you tried things, you know, and something didn't. And you grow a lot faster playing in front of people than you do practicing at home.
Seems like back then, all you worried about, I'd imagine, or in guitar players from your generation, is working on your craft. You know, that was like the only factor that you're worried, as far as like your playing goes. Like, now people care, it seems like people care more about their videos themselves, like you know, like what, yeah. like putting more emphasis on the editing of their videos, and really that's really not the point. And I understand, like I don't do the Instagram video thing. Like, I have an Instagram and all that stuff because I have to, because of the band, but I don't put my focus on making cool videos for that, if you know what I mean. And I feel like a lot of guitar players are focusing more on that now.
That seems to be the case. You know, I remember when it first started, really, and I was like, oh, what's this all about? What's this video thing, right? And so now we have a couple generations that have actually grown up with that, and that's what we expect, and that's what's going on. Personally, I just put a picture up and the recording, because I want people to just listen and not be distracted, you know, by the video. You know, that's just me. You know, I just, that's kind of how I feel about it. I haven't anything against videos. And I think educationally, the video format is phenomenal, obviously.
Right. Well, you're in a position where you can do that. You don't have to, you know, you don't have to, worry about establishing yourself. You know what I mean? Anyone who's into jazz guitar should already know who you are. You know what I mean?
Well, you know, I'm not so sure that's true, but that's a nice thought.
Maybe I'm just a big fan of your work, so I assumed everyone else is. You know what I mean? I saw your guitar, your headless guitar. What is that? I've always wanted to ask you, what brand guitar is your headless?
It's a Klein, Klein. And it was invented by a luthier named Steve Klein, who's mostly known for his acoustic guitars. Very, very high-end, very beautifully made acoustic guitars. He lives in Northern California. And the story I heard is that he was hired or commissioned to build an electric for a guitarist named Michael Hedges, who was a well-known, you know, acoustic guitarist. And this is the design he came up with. And then, as far as I know, I think he just wanted to stick with, you know, acoustics. We sold that part of the country company to another fellow named Lorenzo German, and made them for years. That's who I bought mine from. And now I believe Steve Klein is making them, you know, again. But they're ergonomically perfect, and that's pretty much why I use them.
It's an interesting guitar. It reminds me of a Synthax. The shape.
I don't remember those, yeah.
have you ever played one of those things? I'm sure you've seen those things. They're not made anymore, but the ergonomics of it, if that's a word, it's very similar, like the way the neck is tilted up towards you, how yours is. It's the exact same sort of layout.
Yeah, I remember those. I have played them, actually.
Are they as cool as they look?
Well, you know, it was early synthesis. You know what I mean?
Okay.
And so, you know, things glitched on the lower strings a lot. And they, I don't think they were perfected. I remember Lee Ritenour played one. I remember Alan Holdsworth had one.
He made them cool.
Yeah, right. But and you know who else? I believe, I think Victor Wooten played bass.
Really?
Yeah.
Okay. I'll have to look that up.
Early on.
Now, do you think it, what do you think was the problem with it? Was it just not, or maybe it just wasn't right for you because you're a jazz guitarist, but are you into like the fusion-y, like Holdsworth-y sort of stuff where it's like experimental, or you're just like traditional jazz?
Well, no, I like it. I listen to everything. I've played all that, you know, through the years too. I was really into guitar synthesizers when they first came out. And I think the problem with it was just early technology, you know.
Just wasn't there yet, huh?
Not yet. There was also something called the ARP Avatar that I used to use.
What is it?
The ARP, ARP Avatar.
Huh, okay.
Yeah, and that was one of the first. I think what it was each string had its own pickup. I think it was the first of those kinds of synthesizers. And it was this huge thing. You needed a moving van pretty much to move it around. But all the GR700s and all the early synths and even the later ones. And I've made my living playing pretty much all kinds of music. Jazz is, you know, where my deepest roots are, of course. But,
right.
You know, I mean, I've made a living doing almost all styles. You know.
Right. And that's what makes you legendary in a way where you are one of those seasoned players who who've made a name for themselves, where you don't have to kind of you don't have to go along with the times. You are established enough to where you don't have to worry about the new things, and I think that's a good place to be. I mean, obviously if you wanted to, you could, you know what I'm saying, but you've made a mark for your spot in the jazz world especially.
Well, I appreciate your comments there. I'm very fortunate to have an audience. Yeah. So,
let me ask you this. Where do you see the music world heading? Like the guitar world, especially, where do you see everything going? Because I feel like, everything sort of happens in fads. Like there's phases, like every guitar player for a while was trying to sound like Holdsworth, for example, you know what I'm saying? Like everyone's sort of following the trend. Where do you see where the guitar world's sort of heading now?
Boy, I'll tell you, no. Things are so crazy right now. I do know this, that it's not just the pandemic. You know, things were really changing pretty radically.
Right.
Quite a while before that, right? You know, I mean,
right.
You know, I remember, live gigs on the freelance basis kind of started disappearing a little bit right around the year 2000, 2001.
Right.
So that kind of went away, publishing and writing books, things like that. That's lessened quite a bit too because of, you know, internet and all the information's there and it's free.
Right.
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 And then you have workshops and clinics. Well, people don't need to travel and do that much anymore because somebody's always giving a clinic online. Right.
Right.
So those things have changed. So, you know, I don't know where it's going. I do know that the people that are probably in their 20s and 30s these days are probably going to rewrite the rules and rewrite the book on how you do this. You know?
But so would you say teaching? Because you're at Redlands University, right? Is that's the school?
I teach at University of Redlands, and I also teach at Riverside City College in Riverside.
Okay.
You know,
yeah, would you say that's a good? Those are two good avenues for a guitar player to go if they were serious about being a professional guitarist, like teaching.
Well, teaching or playing, actually, I think Riverside City College has one of the best jazz programs in California by far. I mean, it's just a heavy, heavyweight program, and Redlands is equally proficient at training people too. It's just a different vibe. That's more of a conservatory. And it's primarily classical, but I do have a jazz guitar studio there, and so it's a small group, but it's really serious and really dedicated.
Are you like what's his face from Whiplash, like really mean? This is a note, and you yell at them.
Yeah, I think you'll have to ask my students about that.
Now, has there ever been a time where you had a student that came in that just absolutely shocked you? Like, just like, I'm sure you've seen so many young, like at the time, like young aspiring guitar players who were nobodies at the time, but like you, I'd imagine you came across so much like raw talent, you know, when they came to you.
Yeah. You know, you can't, you know, it's a funny thing. Sometimes you can't tell at first, you know, but I've had some extremely good students through the years, not just at the colleges, but, you know, I spent so many years traveling for the National Guitar Workshop, you know, about 20 some years doing that. And every town I went to, you know, and everywhere, Canada, United States, Europe, I've played and taught in Asia, just, you know, all over the place. And there's always a handful of people that scare you to death. You know, you say, wow, this kid's really great. And then it's a matter of whether they recognize and take advantage of the opportunities that come their way. You know, that's a whole other thing. But, I run into, there's a lot of very serious guitarists out there. Sure.
Right. It's sad. I wish, because I was born in 90, so I'm 30. So I grew up like I was a kid, but I still experienced like the last generation of like real music, you know, where it was, I feel like music now it's different, you know, it doesn't have the same raw, like human touch anymore. That's just my opinion. You know, like, everything seems too perfect. Everything seems too uniformed because of technology and stuff. And it's great. I mean, I embrace the technology because I also do film scoring and I have like I have thousands of sample libraries of orchestras and stuff, and it's great, but I feel like the realness isn't really the same anymore. Like as far as music goes, like musicality goes, like there's not as much feel. I mean, that's why like in the 90s, I heard like guitar players like Steve Ray Vaughan and stuff like that, or like those guys, Alan Holdsworth, like the Joe Satrianis of the Vise, like there's really not that kind of playing anymore. There are, but not like before, where, and even where it was appreciated. Do you agree with that? Where like, it's just like certain things are sort of left behind now.
Well, if you're talking about, you know, the mainstream, you know,
like the virtuoso guys. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, you know, that gets all the attention, you know, whatever the Grammy material is and things like that, you know, but I'll tell you this though, no matter what the times are, there's always pockets of musicians that are still doing the great stuff. Okay. They might be smaller, may have to search for them a little bit harder, but there's still a lot of really great music being written and recorded and played. It's just, they don't get the attention. But I don't think it ever goes away. I think it just shrinks, you know. Right. And then, you know,
it seems like the 80s were a good time for that.
Well, yeah,
like for the shredders, you know.
Yeah, that whole thing. But you know, songwriting became the focus in the 90s, of course. You know, for a lot of people. Before the 80s, you know, there was the 70s, and that there was some great like classic rock stuff going on in the 60s. So there's always been good stuff going on. It's just a matter of how much attention it gets, I think. You know,
do you think that sort of era is gone? Because going back to, you know, I see guitar players who are trying to do you know, like the Vai or Satriani or Malmsteen thing. And it's good, but career-wise, like business-wise, I look and I think, man, like you're better off like becoming like a session guy or songwriter, because I feel like the guitar god days are sort of over.
It certainly appears that way. You know what I mean? But again, there's always pockets of people that form an audience. You know, as far as going back, we don't really want to go back. I mean, I don't know what the future holds, but I think we need to go forward to new things, because trying to go back is just trying to relive something that was a product of its times. And things are so different now. We just have to come up with good music that with integrity. That's new. And now, I mean, even the jazz students that I see online, not my personal ones necessarily, but I mean, everybody's playing very, very old material, and nothing wrong with that. I mean, that's just fine. But at the same time, it says something else. It says that we're not writing good new material that people want to play.
What do you think would change that? Maybe some more recognition, you know, like more emphasis on that sort of playing? Like you're explaining or describing?
Well, you know, but I'm not sure what it would take. You know, I mean, people are way into new music all the time, you know, of all styles, right?
Right.
You know, but like, say, like in my case, you know, I have a fairly traditional sound. I just don't worry about anything other than I just do what I do. You know,
right.
If people still like that, that's cool. You know, I'm glad they do. But right. What we need to do is get better music education, I think, at a really lower age. You know, I mean, I think if people grow up with good quality music, they're going to stay listening to that kind of music forever.
Right. Yeah. You know, kids nowadays, I unfortunately have Cardi B to grow up with, you know.
Yeah. Well, you know.
I don't mean to hate on it, but it's like, come on, you know, it's ridiculous at this point. Maybe it's because I'm a musician, a professional musician, so I know good playing and good songs when I hear it. But the kids these days, they won't know better unless they themselves like venture out to look. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I think it really stems from music education, actually. You know, because I don't think it's been that much different in other times. People that weren't into playing music just kind of looked at music as something to do while they're washing their car, right? You
right.
know. Where the kids who are in band or orchestra or taking guitar lessons or piano lessons, you know, these are the people that are really looking into the music thing. But they stopped right. music in school so long ago that they're not. A lot of them just don't have the chance to be exposed to the good stuff.
Yeah. Did they stopped music in schools? Is that what you had said?
Well, yeah, they really have. I mean, there are some schools where it still lives, but a lot of school districts have ended or cut down.
Oh, that's too bad.
Oh, sure. And if you don't have that going on at a young age, they're not going to suddenly grow into it.
You know? Right. See, I was fortunate. I play guitar and piano. And when I went through school, I took you know, like guitar and orchestra, and then I took orchestration and stuff as I grew up throughout school. And that was just like normal. So when you say like it's sort of has been sort of cut back, I didn't realize so. And another thing I've noticed is people are sort of emphasizing, I think because of technology is sort of becoming a crutch, but it's a normal thing now where people sort of emphasize on not knowing anything and still making it work. And that's fine because I it's a natural gift for me. My grandfather was a classical pianist. He was a virtuoso pianist. He used to play with Dean Martin, Frank Sinatra, and he was on the Merv Griffin Merv Griffin variety show. I don't think that's what it was.
Yeah, he had a talk show kind of.
Yeah, he was like the what's his name, Paul Schaefer. He was like the Paul Schaefer.
Okay.
on the piano, it was one of those sort of things.
Gotcha.
That's his name, right, from Letterman. Yeah, Paul Schaefer. But he, you know, so it came natural to me. So I had the luxury of learning by ear, like not knowing anything. And just being able to pull it off. But then I gravitated towards learning and growing in my craft. But I feel like players nowadays, like bedroom players, like they take pride in not knowing anything. Have you like noticed this like wave of new thinking?
I think you had elements of that in every era, but I think it's a little extreme now. But I remember people saying that even in the 1960s. It's, I don't really know anything, but here's my song, you know.
Oh, is that the, okay.
You know, but, and I remember even hearing that in the 90s, quite honestly.
So it's not technology causing this, you think?
No, I think, actually, I don't know. I maybe it's the technology, maybe it's a rebellion against the technology, you know what I mean? It's kind of like, I don't need that stuff. I'm good the way I am. I'm doing this as organically as I can, you know. And, you know, there's a certain validity to that. But, you know, there's...
Because you need natural raw talent, like an ear. But people don't take that and then grow even further with education. That's the problem.
Well, yeah, I think two things have to happen. You know, I mean, there's an old saying, there's only two kinds of music, good and bad. And
right.
So then you have to kind of figure out, well, what makes good music? And for myself, I've actually found an answer.
What is that?
The answer to me is it's got to be technically proficient and played from the heart. If it doesn't have both of those, I'm probably not going to listen to it. You know, if it's just proficiency, I don't want to hear that. If it's just heart, I don't want to hear that either. It's got to be a balance of both for me.
Right. Yeah. Like who do you, who do you find yourself listening to? Or, you know, I mean, I'd, like, I'm sure you have your heroes from when you were young. Who do you find yourself going back to?
Well,
when it comes for inspiration and stuff.
Well, okay. Lots and lots of people, not just guitar players, but, you know, I think I listen to Bill Evans a lot. I listen to Chick Corea a lot. I listen to Keith Jarrett a lot. As far as guitar players, all the classic guys, you know, of course, the Barney Kessels and Wes Montgomery and Joe Pass, people like that, you know. But I also like, you know, I love Scott Henderson's playing. I love Frank Ambali's playing. I like, just anybody new that's coming out. There's an interesting player named Antoine Boyer, who I've become aware of in the last year or so. And he's a young guy who plays great fingerstyle guitar.
Okay.
So there's always people popping up, you know. I kind of stay aware of what's going on with everybody and everything. But the real greats are the ones that, you know, that have lasted all these years and people still listen to. Yeah.
Right. Now, who would you say who would you say your favorite player or artist you've worked with? Do you have a favorite, like one that you've always like in the past, like anyone that you've like you always wanted to work with and you finally had it happen where you like always sort of fangirl over like secretly because they're, you know, they're a big influence to you?
Well, I'm going to say no, but not for the reason you might think. I've been really, really fortunate. I've either played with or been able to hang out with all of my heroes who were still living, actually. Right. So it's a very, very lucky situation for me. And I have to say that I've loved them all equally because they all represent something completely different, you know, from each other. And to me, that just sort of expresses how the instrument itself, how guitar just kind of fits, can fit into anybody's life or anybody's personality, and they can develop their own voice. You know, right. I mean, when you compare, I mean, you know, I've played with John Abercrombie. I've done a few things with, quite a few people actually. And one really isn't better than the other. They all just have their own voices because they've all done their homework and they're all great artists. And right. I just feel fortunate to have, you know, been associated with them and been able to play with them, you know.
Right. And I know that feeling, going back to what you're saying, having met and played or hung around your heroes, it is a cool feeling. I'm fortunate of that as well. There's actually a couple heroes of mine that I've become buddies with or acquainted with even before I joined my band Gemini Syndrome. Because nowadays, I don't, sometimes I have to remind myself how big of a rock band I'm in, because I don't really focus on that. And I'm sort of, this is the biggest thing I've been part of. You know, I've been playing for like 20 years, but like career wise, this is the biggest thing on my resume. So I'm sort of in that bedroom guitar player mentality still. So and I think it's better that way, because there's a lot of people who turn into, you know, like egotistical pricks, you know, and they think they're just like the shit. And I never understood that. And I think for me, like I still sort of am shocked when I find myself, you know, hanging out or chatting with my heroes, just, and like when they don't see me as a fan, but a friend.
Uh-huh.
So I think it's a really cool feeling.
Well, you know, it's I've spent most of my life like traveling, right? And that keeps you humble. Definitely keeps you humble.
Traveling?
Because every town you kind of blow into, you know, there's five guys in town that are just monstrously great players, and you may or may never hear of them, you know, but they're out there. And so when you start realizing how many people are that good that you never heard of or never nobody else has either, you know, it keeps you humble. It keeps you thinking that, well, you do what you do it the best you can. And there's a lot of great artists out there. That's all.
Right. I think people are too focused on comparing themselves to others, whether it's based on career or skills. But I think correct me if I'm wrong, but I think a good viewpoint of it is to just focus on how you can better yourself as a musician.
Yeah, I agree. I think, you know, I mean, you should learn from everybody, of course, right?
Right, right.
I think you need to focus on what you do. There's an old, but it's an old cliche: to compare is to despair, right?
Oh, it's a good one. I never heard of that.
Yeah, so if you're comparing yourself to other players, you're not going to feel very good, probably. So, you know, I think it's just really good to credit other players with what they do really well, and right. also appreciate what you do well too, and just realize you're two different people, and you have two different voices. That's all.
Like, give yourself more credit.
Well.
Instead of self-deprecating yourself, you know, like putting yourself down. Because a lot of people are hard. Like, I grew up, people have always told me, oh, you're amazing. But I never saw it. You know, when people would say that to me, I would think, no, you're lying. Like, and it's not me, like, trying to be dramatic. It's just I just never really gave myself enough credit. And I think that's, would you say that's an important aspect to be truthful to yourself so you continue to grow and don't hold yourself back?
Yeah, I do. But it's a real thin line, you know. I mean, it's good to, you know, acknowledge the things you do well, right? And we all take up a little bit of space, right, in the world.
Right.
But you don't take up more space than you're really entitled to, you know. So it's not so much about, for me, it's kind of been the opposite. I've had a lot of validation in my life, right? And so I walk around going, wow, I'm not so sure, you know, all this validation is completely true, you know? And so, you know, you just have to concentrate on doing what you do and doing it really well and not really worry too much about your status in the guitar community, right?
Right.
I mean, if you've done your homework, you've done your practicing and you continue to practice, continue to play honestly, that speaks for itself, you know, and no matter what happens, some people are going to love what you do and some people aren't. And you have to be okay with that too. So I think instead of just focusing on your own musical development and not worrying about much else.
Right. And I would imagine through that, like, progression will come, whether it's career or playing or skill set. I'd imagine if you just focus on the right things, it'll happen. It's just going back to what I said earlier, people aren't really focusing on that anymore. They're focusing on, okay, how can I become more popular? How can I get noticed on Instagram? And I think that's what is making playing or music, because there's still good players, but I feel like the integrity of the songs and the work are sort of lacking now because of other factors people have to worry about going. And again, like I said before, you didn't have to worry about being popular on social media because there was no social media back then. So you had time to focus on your craft.
Well, yeah, there was that. There were still plenty of egotists back then. Okay. Plenty. It's just different. You're not hunting for likes back then like you are now, right?
What would be the equivalent of social media back then? Like, they didn't have like what they have now. So,
well, actual social contact, you know, I mean, it's like, are you filling up the club at night? Are people coming to hear you on a Wednesday night? You know, I mean, it's that sort of thing. And so if some guy's real popular in town and he fills up the club, you know, even on a Sunday night, wow, that's a big thing, right?
Right.
You know, so there were other barometers of how often you worked, how steadily are you booked, you know, how much are you making, where are you playing, you know, that sort of thing. But again, I will say this, the very, very, very best musicians I've ever met have always been the most humble as well.
Right.
You know?
Yeah. Yeah. It seems like the less popular someone is, like, the better they are.
You know, I'm talking about very famous people.
Oh, okay.
Famous people.
And that was probably a wrong way to put it. But yeah, I get what you're saying.
Yeah. I mean, the ones who have succeeded the most seem to be the most humble.
Really?
Yes. Like,
well, I mean, I've lucked out. There's only been like one or two people I've met. Luckily, none of them have been my heroes, but people I've met who are just like jackasses, like things I've heard about them that I don't even know about them. I don't even know them. Because in the music world, I've learned that things get around. You know, you hear things about people that you don't even know.
Oh, for sure.
And one piece of advice that every hero has given me, because I look at all my heroes as like older brothers, because I'm only 30. And I've been blessed to progress in the industry a little faster than someone my age, you know, as far as like rock, you know, I lucked out. And through that, I get to you know, become acquainted with my heroes, and they've all influenced me like older brothers. And one thing they've all said to me is, make sure, if there's one thing to make sure of, is make sure you're known for being a nice guy.
Yep.
Because that'll go a long way.
Yeah.
And it's true.
It's absolutely true. I mean, they've got to be able to hang out with you. You know, I mean, there's plenty of great players out there, but you want to be a great player who can also hang.
Right. Yeah. I feel like that goes a long way, because there are times I feel like I always have this saying, like whenever I would talk to people I looked up to, I made sure not to fan zone myself. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean by that? Because yeah. if you nowadays, like if you message people saying, oh, my God, I'm your biggest fan. You know, I love that one thing you did on that one song. And, you know, kind of like that Chris Farley skit with Paul McCartney on SNL.
Yeah.
You know, that kind of, I mean, I'm sure you've come across this. Obviously, you appreciate it. But like when someone fanboys or fangirls, like it's like, all right, I get it. Thank you. You know, but I made sure, like, I wanted them to see me as a cool person, not just someone who just likes them for the things they do. Mm-hmm. And I've learned that that actually goes a long way. And I'm genuine about it. You know, I'm not pretending to be their friend to get close to them. It's just when I'm just that kind of person where I you know, instead of asking them like about a guitar part, I'll be like, hey man, how's your day going? Hope you're doing well. You know what I'm saying? Just mm-hmm. being a nice person.
Well, I think that's true for no matter what you do, you know, music or anything else, you know.
It's about building relationships, huh?
Yeah, I mean, the music business, it has all kinds of people in it, just like all businesses do, you know. But I will say the best and the finest have always been the best and finest people, too, that I've met.
Right, and it's true. I've met people who, like I played for, it was definitely a learning experience for me. I played with a pop artist who wasn't known, but she had this, out of nowhere, she had this false sense of accomplishment. Like in her head, she just, for whatever reason, thought she just was this popular known pop artist, and really no one knew who she was. And she treated me I learned what not to put up with. And I'm sure you've had those experiences too, probably getting up and, you know, into your career. And I, you know, and she would like convince me that like I was green, which I was, but so was she, you know, like people, like narcissistic people where they try to make you believe that they're amazing. And, and she had bad people skills, and a buddy, one of my heroes told me, you know, like that's not going to go well for her. And surely enough, it didn't. And I progressed. And I think it's good when, like people just are natural and like, not natural, but people are genuine,
mm-hmm.
you know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I, you know, again, I think nobody really knows what's going to happen to you in your career or anybody's career. I mean,
right.
You just put it out there and you try to be as honest about everything, including your music, and try to serve people, you know? I think
what do you mean by that?
Keep other people's interests higher than your own.
And when you're trying to mingle with them, you mean? Or get close
to
them?
Well, when you're doing business or mingling or anything, I think it comes back to you. And I think you're doing the world a big favor if you're putting other people before yourself. And that, and even though music means you have to do some self-promotion, you can do that without being, a huge egotist. You know, I mean, you can just be a person who plays music. I mean, I'm not so concerned about people knowing me. I'm right. more concerned about people knowing my music.
Right. That's a good place to be. It seems like it's obviously worked for you.
Well, you know, it's a lifetime of learning. You know, you eventually learn things over time. You know, when you first get started in the business, everything's pretty gung-ho. And, you know, and you change. The business changes you. Life changes you. And at this point, you know, I look back, kind of go, well, you know, I mean, the best business contacts I've had have been personal. And so I try to keep it that way, you know.
Just right.
Keep it all personal, and it seems to work out better for me that way.
Right. Well, before we head out, I know you got to get going for your you have your students you're meeting with or you're doing your class. Do you have anything to look out for us to look out for? Anything in the works, or are you just mainly teaching right now? And
well, no, actually, I'm writing lots of music these days, And but you know, it's a little different now. Usually you perfect what you write while you're traveling and on the road and playing, right?
Right.
And so staying at home, working on this stuff takes a lot longer. And so I'm still writing, and then I upload stuff to my YouTube channel on a regular basis. And that's it. So right now I'm teaching pretty much 5 days a week, all day online.
Okay.
So I'm pretty busy. But in between students, I'm writing and recording. And as the performances get better on the material, you know, I get closer to uploading it to my channel. And that's kind of teaching and writing. That's mostly what I'm doing.
You know. Great. Well, and your YouTube is just Jody Fisher, correct?
Yeah. Uh-huh.
That's cool. Right. So yeah, because simple, you know, people can find you easily.
Yeah, there's music and instructional stuff both. So.
Great. Well, listen, I don't want to keep you much longer. I know you got to go, but I thank you so much for coming on and chatting with me for a bit.
My pleasure.
It was really fun.
Really, I had a good time too. And it's nice to meet you too, by the way. So.
Yeah, nice to meet you as well. And hopefully, I'm sure we'll chat in the future. Okay. And I'll let you know when this is up. So I'll send you a link.
Okay, thanks so much.
Have a good one.